Hey Dreamers, Joe here, and I want to tell you about my upcoming book release. It's called 31 Life-Changing Concepts, and I want to give it away to all of you for free right now. All you have to do is go to howtodream.co/book and download the PDF format. The only thing I ask is that when it comes out, you review the book on Amazon, as well as download it for free in the first 5 days. On the same page, howtodream.co/book, which is my Disney music mashup, I've posted the brand new video for Adventuratorium. So please check it out and let me know what you think. Thank you for all your love and support.
This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
Hey, dreamers, I'm Joe Pardo, and today I'm talking with Nick Gelso. It looks like Gelso, but it's not. I already made that
it's
mistake.
It's Italian. Yeah, it's Italian, man. Italian.
Who is making his dreams come true by working in the podcasting industry full-time since 2008. Glad to have you on the show, Nick.
Joe, it's a pleasure to be here, man. Saturday afternoon, chilling in my studio, talking about podcasting with a fellow podcaster. Go figure. Good way to spend the weekend.
Oh, I agree. I love talking about podcasting, and I love the industry and the community that's built around it, and I hope to be able to continue to be in it for a long time.
I think that's all of our dreams, buddy. We all want to be doing it a long time. It's nice now that there is an industry that coincides with this great term, podcasting, because in the last 16 months, man, it has blown up. It's blown up.
It's only taken a decade.
That's it. Yeah, man. It's true.
So, Nick, why don't you get started by giving some background about yourself?
Oh, man. Background in what way, Joe? The story's long. Are you looking for, you know, how I got in the industry? I mean, you tell me. Direct me.
All right. Why don't we get started by talking about how you got into podcasting?
Okay. This is, like I said, kind of a long, confusing story. So I'll give you the best I can, the short version. I'm 36 years old, Joe. So at 22, I opened a restaurant, fine dining, kind of ultra lounge out here in Northeast Pennsylvania. And my history, business-wise, has always been in the restaurant industry. And 22, built this restaurant by 25, it was grossing $2 million a year. Dude, by 28, I was bankrupt. Go figure, right? So you ask, how the hell did that happen? Well, that's a whole nother book. I'm not going to go there, but basically too young, too successful, too quick. So as I come out of the restaurant industry, trying to kind of resurrect my self-esteem and my finances and my world, So I got out of the industry, and, you know, when you're in the restaurant industry, any business, your phone is constantly ringing off the hook. You're needed by, you know, I had 50 employees at that time. So it's just constantly ringing text messages, and I was always, you know, stressed out while in business. And once we shut the doors, the phone stopped ringing, man. And I'll be honest with you, be careful what you wish for, because the sense of meaning or you know, importance, your self-esteem is kind of hooked into that constant phone ringing, you know, and your name being called and people needing you to direct them. And, you know, a week or so out of the business and the phone is silent and I'm kind of just sitting around the house. Well, depression started to sink in a little bit. Believe it or not, my mother, I'm an Italian boy. I'm a mama's boy, you know. So my mother had advised that I do something every day like it's a job. This is a true story. I did two things. I'm not a holy roller, Joe. I'm a spiritual guy, but I'm not a holy roller. But at that time, I think I was feeling I needed something else in my life to help me get my back on my feet, you know? So I started going to church every single day of the week, every day. It was great because it was, you had to get dressed. It was a reason to get up, get showered, get shaved, put on a dress shirt and pants, and go be among people. Now, the people were maybe all senior citizens, but, you know, that's usually who goes to daily masses, but it was still getting out of the house. So the second thing that I did was I started to post many, I guess you'd call them blog posts on Facebook about my favorite sports team, which is the Boston Celtics. As I was posting these, I started to realize that I kind of liked the attention from the shares and the likes on social media. It was kind of cool. You know, people are actually reading about me, but you know, I was just shocked that people would be kind of interested in listening to me bit about what's bad about the NBA or what's great about the NBA, but they did. So at that point, you know, unemployed, down self-esteem, sense of need and importance is kind of diminished, going to church every day, coming home every afternoon, and starting to build what would be like a Blogspot amateur web blog where I could just kind of post this stuff instead of on Facebook. And I posted a story about Larry Bird, who was a member of the Boston Celtics, legendary Boston sports guy, basketball player, and CBS Sports actually linked to it, and it blew up. It got like 100,000 page views or something. It was insane. And I thought, man, maybe I'm really onto something here. So it just grew from there as far as the blog was concerned. And then I started to do regular appearances at Boston Radio, who was my former business partner and co-host on my first ever podcast back in 08-09. And I say 08-09 because I think in terms of NBA seasons in years, because that's how our business calendar works. So it was the 2008-09 NBA season. He heard me on Boston Radio and he actually called me up. He got my number from email, called me and said, dude, we got to do a podcast. And I said, what is a podcast? I had no idea. He showed me a couple other sports shows at that time. None were going on out in New England, really. And from there, we launched a very amateur, like listening back to it now, it's kind of really funny, but a very amateur podcast called The Celtics Late Night Show. And we broadcasted Sundays. We broadcasted live Sundays at 11 p.m., hence the name Late Night Show, and hence the acronym CLNS Radio. So from there, obviously kind of first to market with this product in the New England area, not trying to sell it, just doing it as part of my hobby, which was the amateur blog on the Boston Celtics, and that blog was called North Station Sports. The podcast that went along with it was the Celtics Late Night Show. And then within 12 months from there, my co-host and I became business partners. We merged two web blogs because he had an amateur one himself on the Celtics, and we created CLNS Radio. Once that happened, we started getting people who were coming to us and saying, oh, you're doing an online radio show. That's what we called it back then. They'd say, hey, could you teach me how to do it? So it became kind of like it's grown into a community, Joe. And now at this point, we have something like 65 contributors. Some are full-time, some paid, and some are, you know, volunteer. But it ranges everything from bloggers to locker room reporters and cameramen to on-air personalities. And that's kind of how it blossomed. And then we've had offshoots after that. Beats and Eats we launched in 2012, which is another podcast network, but more food, wine, entertainment related. And that has blown up as well. So I've been very blessed and fortunate to be able to figure out my paths in life rather quickly. Like I said, there are so many people who are my age now and still have not identified their goals and their dreams, which is kind of giving them a roadblock to achieving those goals and dreams. I was fortunate enough to have it at 22. And then after having a major failure in losing my business, I was able to identify another goal and dream rather quickly. And that had helped me get back on my feet fast. So that's kind of like the, if you can imagine, that's the condensed version of the story, Joe. Imagine the long version. Wow.
That is quite a story, though. I love the fact that you were able to get yourself out of that depression. I mean, my family recently just sold one of their businesses. You know, the idea is oh, there's going to be a lot less of this. I mean, people can't right. see me like waving my hands in front of my ears, but or flapping my hands in front of my ears. But the reality is when the phone calls stop, you just have, you're just there with your thoughts. And then it's like, well, what do I do next? You used to know what to do next, right? Because you'd wake up and you had a routine and you had things that needed to be done.
It was instinctive. And part of my, I would say part of my personal challenges, Joe, is to really stop working. I work 24/7. I'm a workaholic. And one of the things that is, you know, people say you've got to be disciplined to work from home. And most people mean that in the way that you got to get up in the morning. You can't lay on the couch all day. You got to put in the work. My issue is that my office is, you know, 50 feet from my bedroom and 50 feet from my living room, and I can work 24/7. So looking back at my tenure in the restaurant industry, all of my world, my self-esteem personally and professionally, was shoved into my work world. So when the work world went away, all that was left, like you said, was myself and a cell phone that didn't ring anymore. And that's a great, great little piece of advice to young aspiring entrepreneurs or whatever, is you need to have a balance in life. You need to have some personal and some professional time.
Yeah, I always feel the same way. I'm sitting on the couch watching something with my wife and I'm like, I should be doing something. I should be creating, or I should be right. doing this, or my reminders list is like 10 things deep. I gotta chip away at it.
yeah. It's true. And I always felt like if I was home and I was not working nonstop, I'd get a guilty feeling like you just talked about. You know, you get that guilt feeling like, I got to go back. I got to work. And that is actually your self-esteem feeling the void because you've not fulfilled that area of your life, which is to have a stable, consistent, and positive personal life that you look forward to when not working.
Yeah, and the same could be said on the opposite for the work side, right? If there's still there's always going to be something that has to be done. It's just a matter of, can you get yourself, pull yourself away long enough to enjoy the fact that life is going on around you, even though you haven't accomplished the big goal? Like, there's a, you know, all these little reminders and everything it all adds up to the big goal. And it's like, well, I haven't made that big goal happen. But at the same time, it's like, hey, life is still going on. I should probably enjoy that because I might not wake up tomorrow. So Nick, how was it received by your family when you found podcasting and blogging as a thing to do as a hobby when you got started? And then when the transition started to happen into becoming a full-time job, how was your family's response to all that?
You're crazy. You're crazy. I think they looked at it as part of the recuperation or recovery process from having just lost my business. So they were encouraging, but I don't think any of us thought it could ever turn into a full-time, you know, corporation. And it took many years to get there. So it was like anything else, Joe. I mean, you like playing basketball? Your family's going to tell you, hey, go play hoops if you're depressed, you know? So it's, or you like golf, go play golf, you know? So in my regard, yeah, I like playing basketball and golf, but blogging turned into somewhat therapy. And then podcasting really did, because as you could tell just from this interview, I never shut up. So, you know, I was able to talk to myself and listen to myself talk. And so it was very therapeutic. The family was supportive. And why wouldn't they be? I was not at that time, you know, jeopardizing my world. It was more of a recovery hobby at that time. You know, when I started saying mom and dad or bro or whatever else, you know, I think this could turn into a profession, they definitely all looked at me like I was totally whacked out. You know, like, this is never going to happen. You know, they were supportive, but I don't think they believed.
Well, sometimes it's hard for family to believe because you're basically asking, hey, I want to become that guy that's on TV. you know, but it, in a sense of not that you're on TV, but just that like 1% of people that get to be looked up to by other, you know, hundreds of thousands of people.
I think that it was more on the lines of what is a podcast? How do you make money from blogging and podcasting? And I mean, blogging had been kind of figured out almost to the point where Google started effing with their algorithms because certain companies were making too much money on affiliate work. So they were changing the formula, and it is what it is today, which is very difficult to make money from page impressions. But podcasting had no monetization plan. It was the wild, wild west, and the family and friends were like, how do you make money from that? What do you sell ads? Do you run commercials? And believe it or not, Joe, back then you did run commercials because we were trying to, especially being in the sports world as we got bigger and we were approved for locker room access, trying to really prove your credibility in an industry where podcasting had no presence at that point. So we did run commercials. We mimicked terrestrial radio as much as you could back then. Podcast was pretty much a forbidden word on network until about 2 years ago. You said online radio.
And I think they kind of have a good warranted reasoning for that, because anybody could have a podcast. You didn't have to go to school to become a podcaster. You know, there's no qualification there.
Well, that's always been part of the issue with credibility, especially in the past. Any kid can pick up a mic at CVS and get online on BTR or some of these services and talk and call themselves podcasters. And that, though I don't want to discourage any kid from going after their dream, and for sure, by all means, that's part of the beauty of podcasting, is you could just pick up a mic and talk and call it a podcast. But it's kind of like a catch-22 for those that are using podcasting as a means of income, because it does obviously hurt credibility when somebody logs on iTunes and they hear, you know, Jane Doe talking to John Doe and they're, you know, basically just BSing like a phone conversation, and it's got no production value.
Yeah, I mean, they do have their place, but it's almost as if like there should be another name for it.
How about like learning to podcast? I don't know. It seems that way, right? But at the same time, I don't personally want to discourage anybody from achieving. If we said, look, you can't do that, then you may be discouraging the next best thing in the industry, or the next thing that's going to propel the industry to being, you know, even bigger, is because if you take the motivation from young people, and it's not just young people, man, there's people on BTR. I'm using BTR as an example. I have no problems with BTR, but there's people on BTR that are our age that are getting on the air and just playing music the whole time. I mean, it's just silly. So I'm not discouraging it, but I'm just telling you it is one of the challenges that you know, we who are working this industry for a living face when trying to get credibility with potential sponsors or media outlets, or if you're in sports world, sporting teams, if you're in Hollywood, then, you know, the press junket where you're going to the red carpet. So, yeah.
Well, I guess basically you could just append the term that everything else gets used, which is professional podcaster versus amateur podcaster.
Well, what are you, Joe?
Probably amateur.
You think amateur? I don't know. I would say you're pretty professional. What? That's a subjective word. What determines who's professional and who's amateur? If we're using the young person who's just, you know, picking up a mic at Walgreens and plugging it in and going, that would be definitely amateur. But you have production value to your show. I enjoy your show. So I would say you are not an amateur. You're a professional. So what determines who's a professional and who's not?
I guess you couldn't even say audience size, because depth could be way more important than width. You know, the size of the audience, or who is the audience.
No, the attention span, the attention span of the audience. And that is absolutely, you know, moving away from the amateur professional thing, but that with depth, everything you're talking about with the audience, it doesn't matter if you have 100 listeners or 100,000 listeners. If you have 100, say, okay, you have 100 listeners on your podcast, and the local radio has 100,000 listeners in their market. Those 100 listeners that are tuning in for you, are more valuable than the scattered 100,000 that are flipping through the channels. So I don't like to tie audience into professionalism. I'll give you another good example. There are podcasts on iTunes that have a great keyword in their title, which most times is copyright infringement. But the point I'm trying to make here is that they're going to show up always in the top of iTunes search term results because it's a keyword that people search. Those shows, and a lot of them aren't even active. Some of them are active, but they fall under that category that we're, unfortunately for BTR, we're lumping BTR into. And those people are getting downloads on episodes that don't necessarily deserve downloads, but it could also depend on branding. Your logo could be absolutely professionally done and beautiful, but when you flip on the show, there's no production value to it and it's a waste of time. But yet there's a 100,000 people that are just clicking that because they're curious. So it's very hard to measure, very difficult to measure. So you can't really tie audience level to amateur or professional, I don't think.
No, you know, when you make that point, I think I agree. I mean, that was one of the things that I looked at when I first got into podcasting, for anybody that's actually interested in what we're talking about right now, was, you know, the relationship between my voice and the listener's ears versus just being out on terrestrial radio where they have no way of knowing how many people actually listen.
They have a way of knowing the listener. They don't have a way of knowing the attentiveness or the intention of the listener. I think the intention is just as important as the volume of listeners you have. If they're intending to listen to your message, the power of one listener is multiplied by quite a bit. If you're one of those podcasts that has a beautiful logo but no real substantial content or compelling content, well, they're listening, but they're tuning right out. The intention is, let me check this out. This sucks. Goodbye. You know, so, yeah.
Well, you know, Nick, with that said, what was the biggest roadblock you've hit so far with all of this?
Oh, my. There continue to be, and there have been many. I'd say probably over the years, the biggest roadblock has been monetizing. I mean, that is, I think, everybody's struggle. And I could tell you from somebody who's, God willing, I mean, we've done very well, but it took a long time. And that buildup to that first sponsor, it was extremely frustrating because, like I said, back in 08, 09, 10, 11, even 12, there was no real definitive roadmap in regards to where the industry is going or even how to conduct yourself in a sales call. And again, it would always turn into, what is a podcast? And you'd spend your entire sales call or the entire, you know, 10 or 12 minutes you have the attention of the decision maker, you'd spend the whole time educating him on the industry and not talking about yourself. So that's probably been the biggest roadmap, is consumer awareness. Now, as the awareness has risen, shows like Serial and John Lee Dumas and these guys who are out there all the time, they're helping to educate the consumer, the listener, on what a podcast is. But now that develops another challenge, because now we have a couple things going on. I would say first thing is, you know, they always say first to market loses, right? And those people who were first to market struggled. I'm probably in that bracket on the tail end. I was a little later, being 2000. I was probably three years after podcasting was actually invented. But yeah, you dealt with the struggle of figuring out how to monetize, educating. Then all of a sudden, like I said, Serial comes, the John Lee Dumases of the world come, Adam Carolla decides to podcast Mark Maron, and now, you know, you got Howard Stern saying that's his next calling. So what's happening? The corporations are starting to jump in now. New Year's Eve, NPR released an article saying that 2015 will be the year of the podcast. Well, the corporations start getting involved. There's massive budgets. There's marketing budgets. There's a track record on sales. And now those that were first to market, or even those such as yourself who are – so what are you – you're just about a year into this?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you're struggling because you're fighting against, number one, a market that has just exploded with an influx of shows, some great, some not – but it's watered down. So you're competing against a bigger piece of pie, and you're also having the struggles of the large corporations now investing in the industry and putting their stamp on it, which really it presents the next big struggle for podcasters, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I'll just become pirate radio.
Yo, let me add to that one more thing too, Joe. The other challenge is the get rich quick nonsense. This industry, I mean, we're talking about full time, and yes, I work full time as, you know, in relation to the podcast industry. Let me tell you something. When I'm consulting a client, if their first, or I'm giving them their free consult, if their first question to me is, how do you make money, or when does the money come, I tell them to call another consultant, because I'm looking for people with passion for the work. If you have passion for the work and patience and you do a good job, you work as hard as you could and your content is compelling enough, money financially will start trickling in. There is no get rich quick scheme in podcasting. There have been those that are fortunate, such as John Lee Dumas, and my respect is with that man. I mean, he has worked his ass off to get where he is, and it's paid for him. He's done well, but that's one in a million, literally. So if you're going to come into the podcast industry and assuming to get rich, or even to allow it to offer you a good income or a good lifestyle, you're probably in the wrong industry. I mean, Joe, look at the radio business. I mean, terrestrial radio does not pay their on-air personalities. If you're in this to get rich, get out of it now. And as far as, you know, giving heads up on past obstacles, roadblocks, I just told you, educating the consumer about what podcasting is. And then it's kind of flip-flopped now to the big corporations getting their big chunk of the pie and leaving a very small sliver for guys like you and me.
Well, there's a lot there. First, let me start by saying that, you know, John Lee Dumas is a really great person. I've had him on the show for two episodes. You should definitely go and check them out. But at the same time, like, that's where I came out of. Like, I didn't go to the Podcaster's Paradise, which is his, like, group to get started in podcasting. Though right now he has a free course or something to that effect, and a podcast. It's funny because the podcast has podcast in it twice. It's like the free podcast course podcast or something like that.
I don't know. John keeps repackaging stuff. I mean, I see a new podcast coming out from his network all the time. He's a hard worker, no doubt about it.
Yeah, definitely. And but to me, it was like, oh man, like there's all this money to be made. It's crazy. It's just like raining out of the sky. And then within like a month and a half, I was like, oh, well, that's not the way this is. But that's okay. And here I am, actually, I think it's actually been about 9 months. So,
but Joe, you obviously have the passion to persevere through the disappointment when you realized that John Lee Dumas's world is very small. You know, I mean, as far as that goes, it's just not something that it's a lottery ticket. I mean, he's done really staggeringly well. And if you listen to John's message, and especially as 2012 and 13 have kind of, as his message has transitioned over the course of his short career podcasting, it's now he's starting to talk a little bit about the struggles he's had leading up. I mean, 6, 7, 8 months with no sponsors coming in. From when he tells his story, he saved a lot of money, or he's got a backer. I mean, the point that I'm trying to make here is that, John, if you listen, if you take the fluff away, because people just, it's not John's fault, people just want to hear what they want to hear. So when you take away the greatness of all the fluff from the message and listen to what's at the bottom, you're going to find out that John struggled too. He struggled too. It may have been a shorter period of time that he struggled, but a struggle nonetheless. Nothing in life is easy, especially not podcasting or everybody. Well, everybody is doing it now, but they're all getting very disappointed, and you're seeing more pod fading than you ever have because, like you said, they're realizing a couple months into it that, let alone bring in a penny, it's hard to bring in a good enough amount of downloads to make your self-esteem feel good, you know? or your ego.
Yeah. I mean, to date, I got about $2.50 that Amazon will not send me until I get $100 in affiliate link clicks.
There you go. But you know what? You got $2.50 passive income, baby. What did you do? You just sat there and now you're sitting there and waiting for to hit the minimum. You'll probably be waiting a long time to hit that $100.
I probably will be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. I'm not too worried about it right now. So what did you do to overcome getting past people not knowing what a podcast is in your sales calls?
Perseverance. I mean, I've mentioned passion and perseverance. I just felt like from probably month two of broadcasting, again, if you go back and listen to some of those shows, it was like romper room. I was probably one of those kids that I was just describing as part of the whole, I want a podcast, get me to Walgreens to get a microphone. But I knew probably 2 months in that we were onto something. I mean, it was very cumbersome and difficult to podcast then. But at the same time, the perception is it was way more difficult than it was. And today it's much easier. So I think the foresight to see that eventually it was going to happen, having some money saved, even after financially, I was able to get back on my feet fairly quick. But I had a good reputation in the restaurant industry to go out and consult some restaurants that I could continue to use it as a hobby. And as I was doing it as a hobby, I structured it into a business for when that day did happen, that podcasting did take off to the point it did. It just took longer than I expected. Every year it would be, this has got to be the year. I mean, literally, every year I'd meet with my management team and, 2011, it's going to be the year, baby. It's going to be the year. Here we are now, 2015, and it is the year. So I could have quit a long, long time ago, but I loved what I was doing. I just felt like if I hung on long enough, it was going to happen. Patience.
Isn't that what they say about the lottery?
I certainly did not win the lottery. I can tell you that much. But it's the hardest thing to teach young people, too, is the patience. You've got to be – nothing good comes immediately. Like I said, even John Lee Dumas struggled.
Yeah, and he does talk about that in some recent interviews that I've heard, especially like Grant Baldwin.
Yep, he's done it more and more, and I think that he's doing the industry a great justice by putting a heavy highlighter pen, let's put it, to the struggles that he had, because nothing – you don't want to mislead people into thinking that it's so easy, and you turn people off, really. But the good part about his message has inspired a hell of a lot of people, including yourself, and you've been passionate enough to be patient and persevere, and you will do well with this. You really will, and you have a great radio voice.
Oh, thank you. you do too.
Oh, thank you. I got a face for radio too, baby. Let me tell you.
So, Nick, what was your childhood dream growing up?
To own a restaurant. And I did it. Again, it's a matter of God blessing me with the ability to identify my dreams very young. I do a lot of mentoring now, both in podcasting, some life coach mentoring. And the one thing I see with young people is they cannot, when you ask them, what's your dream? They can't identify it. So many can't, and they struggle. My dream was to own a restaurant by the time I was 25. And I did it without the financial assistance of my parents or anybody else but the bank, who was much easier to lend money back then. But I did it when I was 22. I mean, I actually did it when I was 21. We opened when I was 22. So hard work and identifying what your goals and dreams are. My dream was to own a restaurant. Now my dream is to never own a restaurant again.
Well, it's great when you can actually accomplish what you're looking to do and your childhood dream came to fruition. And, you know, was it everything that you hoped it would be?
Yeah, and more, some that I hoped it would not be. But I mean, I started in the restaurant industry as a dishwasher when I was 13. My mother was friends with the restaurant owner, so she let me start work early. I remember distinctly, I think I didn't rake the leaves or something, and my mother said, "You've got to get a job." And I said, "Well, I'm going to go work at Grieco's restaurant." That was the name of the restaurant. And I started as a dishwasher / busboy. So I'd spent a good part of my, formative years, my adolescence in the industry. So I kind of had a good idea of what to expect. One thing I didn't expect was to have it be quite as busy as my restaurant was right off the bat. And that is something that I was very fortunate to have, because most restaurants, they either have their honeymoon period or they have nobody there and have to build up momentum to the point where they hit their peak in revenues. And I was very, very lucky to have that early on, and also to have the experience, and having been mentored by the woman that was my mother's friend, she taught me the ups and the downs and how to persevere and through that and continue to maintain, build, and elevate the standards. And I was able to do that. So I was very fortunate. Again, I thank God for everything. Nothing's taken for granted.
What do your dreams for the future look like?
I would love for ESPN to buy my company. No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't mind that. So if you're out there listening, Mr. ESPN, you know, by all means. But I have really enjoyed working with aspiring podcasters. I mean, I've worked with everything from young people, you know, in their late teens that are want to go into the broadcast industry, to notable names in the reality television world or the Hollywood world, to big corporations. And I got to say that my favorite is really the interns, the people who are young and really want to learn and are aggressive enough to learn and don't have the bad habits that, you know, maybe in radio they're not bad habits, but transferring terrestrial radio to podcasting, it's a transition. And that's always been frustrating to me too, is to consult somebody who has radio history, because they bring with them their radio fundamentals that don't, a lot of them don't translate over, and it's very hard to transition those type people. So you ask what my, I would like to continue to contribute new talent to the industry and make money doing it. Obviously, I'm not a non-for-profit anymore. You know, you want to make money, but you know, you've got to be reasonable too. And obviously, if I'm working with people in their late teens in certain instances, my rates aren't astronomical, you know. So I try to keep it that way, so that way I can continue to fill the tube with new clients and also clients that aren't just millionaires. They could be college students. Does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. Because of the fact that these kids don't necessarily have the money to just throw it around, especially if they already have student loans coming out of college or in college at the time. It's, and I've had to try to explain this to some other people that try to pitch ideas to me that are like, well, I want to help college students or people that are just getting out of college. And I'm like, yeah, but you're going to have to do a lot of people. At that point, I would say write a book, because you know, books can be cheap. It can be very informative.
It's not quite as fulfilling. I mean, because part of the fulfillment is seeing the development of that person and watching them grow. I mean, I've had podcasters that have come on board with me in 2008, 2009 at 18 years old. And here we are now, 6 years later, they're 24 and out of college. And now, you know, some of them are looking to create a podcast business in lieu of going and working for terrestrial radio. So that to me is very, very fulfilling and exciting. And I enjoy that. You're right about volume, but if you mix your services and who you're marketing to as clients between the three, I guess, key components that I just mentioned. I mean, the Hollywood stuff doesn't need to necessarily be there, but you know, you mix it between the corporate world who is looking to launch podcast departments to amateur or college students. Well, obviously the corporate world, the scale of the projects are going to be incredibly more in depth. I'm going to have to bring mentors with me or teachers, I guess. And in that case, those larger projects allow us to bring on the younger people who don't have the same budgets. Because if you join our network, either Beats and Eats or CLNS Radio, you're getting the consultation, you're broadcasting with us, but you're not paying. I mean, there's a monthly membership fee it's under $150. I mean, it's the same price as Blog Talk Radio, where you're getting pretty much nothing other than use of their studio, where we're offering you a document library where you have resources, mock form letters. We develop point of sale for our podcasters. We do logos. So you're getting a lot more, yet you're just joining the community and syndicating with us and paying a minimal monthly membership fee. Does that make sense?
Yeah, diversifying your customer pool is definitely important, especially, again, since you would be working with college students who might not have a lot of money. So you have to be able to have people, but at the same time, you got to stay busy. So it's definitely a thing. And I agree about the book not being necessarily as fulfilling to everybody, for the simple fact that you don't get to see the personal development on a person-to-person basis.
And there's not the interaction. The interaction is very important, especially to somebody who such as myself. I get a lot of fulfillment out of mentoring people and seeing them develop and grow, but also learning about them and having them kind of teach me a bit about myself in regards to how I'm conducting the program. You know, there's always room for improvement. I always have an intro form interview that they kind of fill out, questionnaire, and I have an outro, which gives me a good idea of how myself or one of our mentors on staff who may be assigned to that podcaster is handling him and how he feels he's been serviced in regards to whatever the expense is. I mean, we want to make it worth your while. And it's well worth more than the membership fee, but at the same time, it's only worth what you're getting out of it and how the engagement is back and forth. And again, writing a book, you're not going to have that back and forth. You're kind of just talking to yourself. Nothing against that. I'd like to write a book at some point, you know, but that's a whole different ballgame to me.
Yeah, it's definitely a different ballgame. I mean, I'm working on my first book and it's
it audio book quick. Or audio or written?
Written and illustrated. It's a book for people who don't like to read books, because I don't like to read books.
I don't either. And is it about you?
It's mostly about like life philosophies.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. It's definitely coming along. I'm probably, I don't know when this episode will come out, but it's drawn in the similar style as like the logo for the show and all that with like Sharpie mm-hmm. art. So each chapter is only about a page to maybe two pages. Mm-hmm. And then there's an illustration to go with each chapter. So Nick, before we get going, is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
Yes, there is, Joe. No, honestly, it's the same message. Identify for young people, identify your goals and your dreams and chase them. Do it. Be patient to get to the prize. Keep tunnel vision on that goal and persevere through the time. If you want it bad enough, you'll achieve it. And anything in the world is possible today with the internet, as long as it's used responsibly and, you know, not destructively. So take that opportunity that young people, and I mean that all the way, people, anybody who's not yet identified their dream or achieved their dream, take that, identify what it is you're looking for, identify the steps you need to take to get there, and start walking the walk and start your journey, your pathway into living your goals and your dreams.
Nick, I would love for you to share how people can connect with you, as well as all your websites.
Absolutely, Joe. The name of my consulting firm is North Station Media, where we heavily focus on podcast consultation for corporations, right down to, like I said, college students or people entering college that are looking to get their feet wet in the podcast industry. You can find me on Twitter at CLNS_Nick. And that leads right to our sports company, clnsradio.com, at clnsradio on Twitter. We're also on Facebook, Pinterest, you name it, Instagram. And we're in the iOS market and the Google Play market with mobile apps that are free, podcast apps, network apps where you can get all of our programming. And then on the flip side, for entertainment, food, wine, pop culture, go to beatsandeats.net. There, well, don't mind our website is we're under construction there. We're giving it a facelift, but my main pushing point there is go to the iPhone and Android markets. Both podcast apps are there free of charge. Download them, please. And if you want to directly reach out to me, I'll give you your listeners my personal email address where I answer all the emails coming in and out of this, and I respond to everybody. And that's Nicholas. NICHOLAS gelso, G-E-L-S-O, at gmail.com.
Wow. Thank you very much, Nick. I really appreciate that. And I hope that somebody listening decides to take you up on that because you're full of awesome information. I'm getting to talk to you even before the show was, it's been very enlightening for me.
Thanks, Joe. And I've enjoyed talking to you as well. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to blab a little bit about myself and to plug some of my work. I really do appreciate that. And it certainly wasn't my intention to come on here and give myself, you know, pump my own tires. So I appreciate you doing that for me. And I love your show. Keep up the very hard work and keep inspiring people and helping them to chase their dreams and achieve them.
Anytime, Nick. Yeah, I definitely would love to have you back on in 6 months anytime. To a year, man, and catch up on how things have been going for you.
Anytime, man. I am available for you. You have all my information and feel free to pass it on to anybody that approaches you looking for me, man. I really appreciate it, Joe.
Awesome. Well, thank you for all the kind words about the show as well. I really appreciate it. And I do plan to keep on keeping on with the show.
Good stuff, man. Be good.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.
Hey Dreamers, Joe here. I really appreciate you listening to Dreamers Podcast. If you'd like to find out how to support the show, please visit howtodream.co/support for all the ways you can help out. Thanks for the support, and please keep on dreaming.